Airborne, they turned over the horizontal and retracted their undercarriage wheels. Wolf was quickly connected directly through to the pilots. "Okay, boys, two passes, no heroics," he told them. The pilots replied in the affirmative and clicked off. Then one pilot radioed over to the other.
"Okay, sport, time to make some noise."
The two pogo pilots increased power and quickly climbed to 10,000 feet above the enemy ship. Each plane was bearing four machine guns, wing-mounted and synchronously fed. The pogos went into an attack dive and opened fire at 7,500 feet. Small clouds of anti-aircraft shells started coming up at them, but the pilots expertly began spinning and avoided the flak. They passed through 5,000 feet, and now the pilots could see flashes of sparks atop the mainsail of the enemy cruiser. Their armor-piercing shells were making contact. They'd bought time for the people out on the destroyer's rescue launch, as Wolf had wanted. It was time to break off the engagement and return to the ship. As the lead pilot pulled out of his strafing run, he aimed his gun squarely on the cruiser's mainsail. A 25-shot barrage severed the secondary radar dish and the ship's VHY radio antenna. It also cut down the mainmast, tearing through its flag and sending it in pieces into the ocean. Looking back down at their handiwork, both pilots could see the enemy ship's colors blown into the sea and slipping beneath the waves.
"That's the only way I want to see the Iron Cross,"
the lead pilot radioed over to the other.
"Ripped and sinking." "Roger that," replied his wingman.
The crew of the Hughes Super Sea Bomber witnessed the strafing attack and radioed down to the American destroyer that their pilots were returning safely. But the enemy cruiser was still coming on, and now it was launching a recovery boat, too. At the same moment, Wolf was talking to the Sea Marines in the American recovery boat. They had the one floater aboard and were coming back. Wolf called down to the propulsion room and ordered more gas to be put on the destroyer's double reaction plant. Then he told his crew to strap in for a quick getaway. Meanwhile, the enemy's high-speed boat had slowed down and was hauling the second floater out of the water. This man appeared to be alive, too, but barely. The third floater had drifted far away by this time. The Lewis St. Louis was 35 miles away from the area just 20 minutes later. Captain Wolf was in his stateroom, writing up a report on the incident. Behind him, a large computer was whirring softly. He found it a comforting sound. There was a knock at the door. The ship's executive officer, a man named Zal, came in. He was a tall, wiry guy, not really the poster boy version of a naval officer. Wolf looked up at Zal.
"So where is he?"
he asked the XO.
"The man we brought aboard?"
"Yes. Is he still alive?"
"He is. And he's actually in pretty good shape," Zal said. "Probably hasn't had a meal in a while, but other than that, he looks like he just went for a dip in the pool. He should be on the way up from sickbay about now."
Wolf signaled that Zal should close the stateroom door. Then he lowered his voice.
"Okay, then. Who the hell is he?"
Zal just shrugged. "Damned if I know, Skipper. I don't think he knows himself. He's rather confused at the moment." Zal took something from his pocket and laid it on Wolf's desk. "This is all they found on him."
Wolf picked up the rolled piece of cloth and unwrapped it. It was a small, tattered American flag. Wrapped inside was a faded picture of a young blonde woman.
"Wow, nice babe. Look at that flag, Skipper," Zal said. "It has 50 stars.
Wolf quickly counted the white stars in the blue field.
"Yeah, 50. What the hell is that about?"
"Last time I checked, the American flag had 49, Zal said.
At that moment, there was a knock at the door. Wolf folded the picture back up into the flag and put it in his drawer. Then he signaled Zal to open the door. Two corpsmen walked in. Between them was the man taken from the sea. Wolf took one look at him and then did a double take. The man was tall, thin, muscular, probably somewhere in his mid-20s. His hair was very long, his face bearded but handsome in features. He was obviously Anglo-Saxon, but he looked different. Wolf even removed his glasses to get a better look at him.
"Well, who the hell are you?" he asked the man. "An angel who fell out of the sky?"
The man said nothing. He was wearing sailor scrubs, but this guy was not an ordinary seaman. At least that was obvious. One of the corpsmen handed the man's clothes to Wolf. Then he and his partner quickly departed. Zal closed the door behind them. Wolf examined the set of combat fatigues.
"Well, this is obviously a uniform," Wolf said. "What army?"
The man just shrugged.
"I can't say," he mumbled.
"Can't say or don't know?"
"Both, I guess."
The man looked around the stateroom.
"This ship, who does it belong to?"
Wolf put his glasses back on and leaned back into his seat.
Let us ask the questions first, okay? Have a seat.
Zal guided the man to a chair opposite Wolf, then he took a seat himself on the couch nearby.
Do you have any idea how you got to be in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean? Wolf asked the man.
The man just shook his head.
No idea.
Were you part of a ship's crew? An officer, maybe?
I don't know.
Were you in an airplane? Are you an aviator?
The man shook his head again. He was studying some of the papers on Wolf's desk.
Can I ask a question now?
Okay, sure. Ask away, Wolf told him.
What year is this?
Wolf and Zal just looked at each other.
Well, it's 1997, sport, Wolf replied.
A look of surprise registered on the man's face, but it disappeared just as quickly.
And you are at war, correct?
He asked Wolf.
You saw that firsthand, didn't you?
But who are you fighting, exactly?
Wolf and Zal looked at each other again. Wolf leaned forward in his seat a little.
Are you an American?
The man thought for a moment and then replied.
Yes.
Are you a member of the armed forces of the United States of America?
The man thought another few moments.
No, I am not, he finally replied.
This sent Zal scratching his head.
So you're a member of the armed service, he said, and you are an American, but you're not a soldier of the United States?
The man just nodded.
That's right, I think.
Zal kept on scratching.
Well, now I'm confused.
Me too,
Wolf added.
Listen, pal, we've got to stop this right here. We'll be bringing you back with us. I've got the feeling that someone higher up the ladder will be very interested in you.
The man just shrugged.
Do what you've got to do.
Wolf nodded to Zal.
Okay, get him fed and keep him away from the crew. It will take us about 4 hours to get back into port.
Zal tapped the stranger on the shoulder.
Let's go, pal.
The man stood up.
Just one more question, Wolf said. How about your name? Do you remember that?
The man thought for a moment, then he finally replied.
Yes, I do. My name is Hawk Hunter.
Wolf looked at Zal, who just shrugged.
Never heard of you, Wolf said.
Hawk Hunter was standing on the foredeck of the Lewis St. Louis, taking in many deep breaths and slowly letting them out again. Two armed sailors were watching over him from nearby. He was sure that to them he looked like someone who needed some fresh air, and a lot of it. But his mind was not a total blank. Some things were coming naturally to him. He knew how to walk and talk and breathe. He knew he was an American. He knew who the Germans were, what a destroyer should look like, and that the bigger the airplane, the harder it is to fly. But what he was doing an hour before he found himself in the water, he didn't know. Who were those other two guys in the water with him? And exactly what kind of uniform was he wearing when he was picked up? The ship's captain had said they would make port in 4 hours. More than 3.5 had passed by now. It was getting dark. Hunter sensed the engines begin to slow. In seconds, they were going at 2/3 speed, as if they were approaching land. But again, where the hell was it? They seemed still to be out in the middle of the ocean. But then his ears began to pick up things his eyes couldn't. Noises, motors running, neon burning, people talking, yelling. What happened next was simply astonishing to him. One moment they were moving in complete and utter darkness. The next they were sailing off a very bright, very noisy coastline. What happened? Hunter looked behind him and realized that the destroyer had just passed through a huge, almost invisible screen. It was at least a half mile high and was being held up by an endless series of slender poles set into pilings about a mile offshore. It was as if someone had put a big curtain along the entire coastline.
You really are from another place, aren't you?
Hunter turned around. It was Commander Zal, the XO. He'd been watching him.
I can tell just by the way you looked at the big screen. You've never seen anything like it before, have you?
Hunter just shook his head.
Nope, never.
It's called an LSD. Stands for Light and Sound Dampener. It keeps all light, all radio signals, all TV signals from going out, but still lets everything in. Like a two-way mirror. This way, the coastline doesn't have to black out every time it gets dark. Everyone knows about them. They've been around for years. Look at this one. It stretches all the way up to Canada. And it's getting very ratty, but it's still holding up.
It's amazing, Hunter said.
Sort of.